All right, so that's the Triple Dipper for the day. Let me move on into the Right Side Way opening monologue. I'll remind you guys that attorney Stan McDonald, partner at the law firm of Wilmer and Lee, a 30-year veteran in the practice of law. Stan McDonald is indeed your daily sponsor of the Right Side Way monologue, and I'll tell you more about Stan here in just a minute. All right, let me just say, I read a story not long ago that I had not heard until then. So obviously the greatest athlete of the first half of the 20th century was a man named Jim Thorpe. You probably all heard of him, but have you heard his whole story? I mean, there seems to be nothing that Jim Thorpe couldn't do. In the early 1900s, Jim Thorpe became a legend. He was a two-time All-American college football player. He went on to play in the early days of the NFL. He played for a short time as a professional basketball player, believe it or not. He also spent 7 seasons in the Major League Baseball arena with New York Giants. He set records at everything he tried. He was on 3 national championship football teams. He was inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. He's the first man to ever rush for 2,000 yards in a season. It's said that he also, by the way, excelled at hockey, lacrosse, tennis, boxing, and even ballroom dancing. But it was his appearance at the 1912 Olympic Games that launched him into the hearts and minds of Americans. Now, Jim Thorpe was orphaned as a young boy. Both of his parents and his twin brother all passed away, and Thorpe became a ward of the state. And he wound up at Carlisle School in Oklahoma, where he saw some older boys practicing a high jump. So Jim, with no training at all, wearing a pair of old coveralls, he cleared the bar. And the next day, the Carlisle coach, who, by the way, was none other than Pop Warner, the Carlisle coach found him and asked to talk with him. And Jim Thorpe is said to have asked the coach, "Did I do something wrong?" To which Coach Warner said, "No, son. You just broke the school jump record." So Jim became an athlete. And what an athlete. No man set more records, won more championships, inspired more fans. I mean, he was epic. And then came the opportunity to compete for the U.S. team at the 1912 Olympics in Stockholm, Sweden. A picture was taken of Jim Thorpe while he was there. JP is going to put it up on the screen right now for those of y'all that are live streaming. But a picture was taken of Jim Thorpe while he was there, and if you look closely, you'll notice he's wearing mismatched shoes. And on one foot, he's wearing multiple socks. I mean, was this a style? Was he a trendsetter? Something special about the shoes? None of the above. You see, just before some of the events that Thorpe was slated to compete in, somebody stole his shoes. It turned into a mad scramble while he and his coach tried to figure out what to do. The result was 2 mismatched shoes that somebody had thrown away in the trash. One of them was too small, but he squeezed his foot into it. The other one was too big, so he had to wear multiple socks on that foot to make it work. Who does that? Who works so hard to gain an edge that sabotaging their opposition seems like the right way to win, right? Well, it didn't work out for the bad guys, just so you know. Smithsonian Magazine had a great description of what happened next, and I'm going to read it to you directly. It said, Jim Thorpe began the Olympics by crushing the field in the pentathlon, which consists of 5 events in a single day. He placed first in 4 of them, dusting his competition in the 1,500-meter run by almost 5 seconds. A week later, the 3-day decathlon competition began in a pouring rain. Thorpe opened the event by splashing down the track in the 100-meter dash in 11.2 seconds, a time that was not equaled again until the 1948 Olympics, over 30 years later. On the second day, it says, Thorpe's shoes were missing. He and his coach put together a mismatched pair just in time for the high jump, which Thorpe won. Later that afternoon came one of his favorite events, the 110-meter hurdles. Thorpe blasted through the track in 15.6 seconds, again setting a record. On the final day of competition, Jim Thorpe placed 3rd and 4th in the events that he was the most inexperienced in. That was the pole vault and the javelin. And then came the very last event, the 1,500-meter run. The metric mile, they called it. A leg-burning monster that came after 9 other events over 2 days, and he was still in mismatched shoes. Okay, here's the thing, me talking again. Here's the thing, Jim Thorpe was a juggernaut. He was virtually unstoppable in whatever sport he participated in. But someone, some sorry individual, decided if you can't beat him, cheat him. If you can't beat him, just cheat him. It was somebody else's really, really good idea to keep the leader of the pack from having the chance to even compete at all. But it backfired in a big way. In fact, if anything, what it did was cement in the minds of the world that Jim Thorpe really was the greatest athlete in the world. Well, let me take that story now and flip it into our current state of politics. You see, liberals have done everything they can think of to sabotage the presidency of Donald Trump. Everything from lawfare to nationwide injunctions. They tried to arrest him, convict him, bankrupt him, even shoot him. It was the political version of stealing the athlete's shoes, and yet the athlete continued to win. Donald Trump continued to win, and he still is. In fact, if anything, what it proves is liberals are just miserable people. There is nothing about liberal progressivism that seems to bear out in any form of happiness. In the liberal progressive mind, everyone's a victim. Everything is not enough. Every day is a day of contention. There's no satisfaction. There's no joy. There's certainly no celebration when things go right, because liberals are, generally speaking, unhappy people. Liberals find reasons not to be happy. It's almost like unhappiness is their goal. It's their aspiration. And by the way, there's actually a name for this. It's called the happiness gap. You heard me. That's a thing, y'all. The happiness gap. And it's not just me saying it. A recent survey was done of over 60,000 Americans that found that conservatives report higher levels of happiness than liberals by far. People who identify in the study as politically liberal have twice the incidence of mental health issues than those who self-identify as conservatives. And that's consistent, by the way, across all demographics, for gender, for age, for race, all of it. Conservative women report considerably higher levels of happiness than liberal men, believe it or not. Gay and lesbian conservatives, there are those, gay and lesbian conservatives report being happier more often than heterosexual liberals. Low-income conservatives, get this, low-income conservatives with annual household incomes below $30,000 or less are happier than liberals at the same income level. And here's the kicker, those low-income conservatives report the same level of mental health as liberals who make six figures of income. Wow. So it's not money, it's not power, it's not based on race, creed, or sexual orientation. Okay, so pray tell, what could be the solution? Why do conservatives rank higher for happiness than liberals? Well, one social psychologist named Jamie Napier has an answer for that. She said, one of the biggest correlates with happiness in our survey was the belief of a meritocracy, which is the belief that anybody who works hard can make it. That was the biggest predictor of happiness. That was also one of the biggest predictors of political ideology. So basically, the conservatives, she says, are much higher on those meritocratic beliefs than liberals were. What I'm saying here is a strong belief in meritocracy. That's what you're saying? Yeah. You know, rewarding somebody for actual merit, achievement, success. So the study of a large number of folks indicates that those who believe in meritocracy are generally happier. Sort of like Jim Thorpe being the best athlete, but then liberals steal his shoes. Okay. Now let me just pause here, by the way, and I'll just tell you flat out, I believe the study is missing one key ingredient, that's faith. I believe that faith in God is the key to meaningful happiness, the source of peace that surpasses all understanding. But for now, let's just take the study at face value. It says that meritocracy, the belief that success should be celebrated, is a key to the happiness gap between liberals and conservatives. And that might explain why liberals freak out over DEI being abolished, why liberals scream when illegal aliens are deported, why liberals bluster when they can't get transgender surgeries on kids. For a liberal, nothing is right, everything is wrong, everyone's a victim, all things are broken, everything needs to be fixed. Like, everything. You can bomb Iran's nuclear plants and call for impeachment. Border numbers at epic all-time lows? Well, let's impede the deportations. Kids rescued from traffickers? Let's turn a blind eye. Oil prices coming down, and yet angry that wind farms are not being subsidized anymore. The happiness gap. The belief that nothing is right. The lack of enjoyment and achievement. Liberals try at every turn to rain on the parade and steal the win. When libs don't get what they think they're owed, it makes them angry, and they steal the win if they can. They'll find the downside, they always do. The glass will always be half empty. But stealing the win, that ain't winning. If you have to lie, cheat, steal, or bribe somebody to get your way, then you really haven't won anything, have you? All you did was show yourself to be a liar, cheater, thief, or a briber. Simple as that. So yeah, you can steal a great athlete's shoes, but it may not slow him down at all. Because stealing the win ain't winning. And maybe, just maybe, liberals might want to look in the mirror and see what their source of unhappiness really is. Maybe meritocracy is getting it right on a regular basis and then actually congratulating somebody for getting it right. And that's a wrap for The Right Side Way.